I'm going to want to make a change there.
Ellie De La Cruz is 3 years younger than O'Neal Cruz.
And he looks like he's
phenom. More importantly, last year, remember, if you'll recall, he burst onto the scene, but then he went into a protracted slump. Such that his end-of-the-season numbers were actually unimpressive. Like, by league standards, by any standards. The guy is ripping the cover off the ball while stealing a gajillion bases this year. He looks like a superstar, and I will point out again, he is 3 years younger than O'Neal Cruz. You just mentioned it. Cruz and Davis, supposed to be the guys who are cornerstone pieces. I thought, Pony, tell me if I'm wrong, you are more of a baseball junkie than I am. Isn't the best college bat supposed to be the safest kind of player to draft? Like, in terms of projectability.
Yeah, of course, because you're not playing against, you know, he's not playing single A baseball.
Wyatt Langford, somebody like that, yes.
You know, class A baseball.
A guy is going against Paul Skeens, maybe, if he's a big timer. Like, a guy like Langford would have been. They had Pedro Alvarez, who ended up being a disappointment, but the guy at least led the NL in home runs for a year as the best college bat out there.
And almost got them to the NLCS.
It was their best play. Yeah, it was their best playoff player in that division series by far. So what am I supposed to make of the fact that they got Henry Davis, and at bare minimum, even if he wasn't going to be able to catch, we were told he was going to be able to hit. And he looks like he couldn't hit his way out of a paper bag right now. Put him in Greensboro. I don't know if you'd get any hopper home runs. The guy looks like he's lost.
Well, now we've got Greg Brown on the line. We always love talking to Greg, even under these circumstances with this offense scuttling right now. And he is brought to you by Gutter Helmet. Don't overlook your home's gutter system. 888-5-HELMET. Greg, live from the Bay Area, where the Pirates are trying to shake out of this slump that they're in. They were two hit last night by a 112-loss team from a year ago. And it wasn't like they had Dennis Eckersley or Dave Stewart on the mound for them, Greg. Your thoughts on what the Pirates are doing at the plate and the criticism now that is going to Andy Haynes for their struggling offense?
Well, I mean, I think it's natural that when a team doesn't hit, the first guy you're going to point to is the hitting coach. So it's not surprising that he's going to get criticized.
Justified?
Now, the criticism is understandable. I don't know if it's justified or not. I don't know enough about hitting to know whether he's a good hitting coach. I just don't. It's just the way it goes. It's like, you know, I know.
Well, what are the Wainers
in Canada was
and those guys? What do they say about him? They rave reviews.
I think that the jury's almost out, still out on to a degree on him for a number of reasons. Because one is you guys, I just heard you talking about O'Neal Cruz. It's a big project and. And he lost that whole year last year, and I thought about it in spring training when I saw him doing so well. I thought, how in the world can this guy miss a whole year of any competitive? You know, that's something to think about, too. I was told that, and we were all told, that Cruz was going to come back and play last year, like in August.
Yes.
And then they delayed that in September, and then he didn't play. Why didn't he play? Why didn't he play winter ball? I think we're seeing how costly that has been for him.
And also that spring training's a total mirage for most guys. We learned that the hard way with the Steelers in the preseason last year, and it's the same thing.
Yeah, and we always do it. Yeah, we do it every year. We always get caught up. No matter the sport, we get caught up in it just the way it is. They're playing the games. We're watching it. We see somebody doing well. We have hope. But I was still stunned at how well he performed, and even early on this season. And now we're seeing the after effects of missing a whole year. We saw exactly what Ellie De La Cruz, I heard you guys talking about him, the Red superstar,
yep.
About how well he's performed and how bad he was. Chris mentioned that just now, that how bad he was last year when the league adjusted to him and he looked like a fish out of water. The same exact pattern happened to O'Neal Cruz in 2022. Exactly. And you saw him figure it out around early August through the end of the year. He was figuring out the league after seeing all the different pitching, what they're trying to do to him, what he should be trying to do. And then it's ripped out from under him because of a bad slide, which, by the way, that there are all kind of tentacles to this. How many players have been careers, and I'm not suggesting this with Cruz, but questionable slides in this organization.
Polanco comes to mind immediately.
Polanco, Tuca Pietermarcano. I don't know if you remember that. At third base a couple years ago, his year was lost. Anyway, that's another subject entirely. But I guess it speaks to why I kind of hold back criticism on one guy. I don't think that, you know, for example, if they made a change at the hitting coach position, all of a sudden these guys are going to start hitting. I just don't believe that.
Well, how much longer into the season? Because this is where I always come down on it, Greg. And I don't. This is going to sound harsh, and I don't mean it to. But as like a fan,
but that's Malsy for you.
Whatever. I mean, sure, if the shoe fits, wear it. I don't really care if people think that of me. But like, as a fan who wants to see this team do well, who got excited by the very good start, what I always come back to, and what becomes sort of DEFCON 1 for me is, I think, what if a lot of these guys just end up not being that good? Like, we all thought they were going to be one thing, and we just find out that they are something else, and that that's not the player we expected them to be. And I just wonder how much longer it goes for some of these players before we start to draw conclusions like that about them.
And that's a great point. And that's something that, you know, hey, you know, brace yourselves, because if that's the case, we have a much bigger issue than Andy Haynes.
Well, then the problem becomes the guy acquiring the players, which is Ben Cherington for me.
It's the whole organization. I mean, if these guys don't pan out, and, you know, we talked about this early on this year, and this is no big secret because Ben Cherington and Bob Nutting talked about it. They're expected to compete this year.
Yep.
So the clock is ticking,
well,
and they all know it.
Well, you made that point before the game last night, I thought, very well. Like, come on, we're playing the A's here.
Yeah,
let's not 100%, fart around in this series.
100%. I still – and I tell you, I was talking to some of the A's announcers yesterday before the game because we try to get scouting reports on teams we haven't seen in a while. And I was saying to them, I said, this is kind of a bad starter for the Pirates to have against them right now. A hard-throwing – and he is, the Joe Boyle, hard-throwing righty, upper 90s. But he's all over the place. I think he walked like 16 guys in about 21 innings this year, something crazy like that. Because the Pirates are offensively, I believe, they're trying to, Andy Haynes and others, they're trying to get these guys to quit being so passive at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Because that has become a trend where they're, not only are they striking out, but they're striking out looking, or they had been anyway. And if you watch these games of the last several games, you can see them trying to change that approach, and they're kind of in between. And I thought, uh-oh, what do you do? Here's a team that, you know, the previous approach of being passive would have been better against a guy like this, but now they got a guy that's all over the place. And, you know, I guess the whole night was crystallized by the Sawinski at bat in the very first inning with the bases loaded, one out. And he takes that fastball right down the middle, and then later strikes out swinging at a pitch out of the zone. And he knows it. And so, you know, I don't think that's, for me, that's not on Andy Haynes. He's working with each one of these guys to do better. Now, I take some degree of solace knowing that this is kind of it's a negative stat, but it speaks to how things can change. And I saw it, I think it was Alex Stumpf wrote it today, that it's the third time in 24 years that a Pirates team has gone through a stretch of playing 13 consecutive games where they score two or fewer runs. Only three times in one season, a 13-game stretch like that over the last 24 years. One of those stretches was in September of 2017. The other stretch was the very end of April last year, on this very day, mm-hmm. through May 16th of last year. And what happened was, you remember that, the collapse after the great start, but they rebounded. And so we talk about the hitting, no doubt about it. It's the biggest problem on this club is the offense. I don't like the fact, frankly, the fan in me doesn't like the fact that they're the passive Pirates, not only at the plate, but on the bases. For me, I want to see some energy on the bases. And I understand managers' philosophies. Well, you got to get on base. True. And the other part of that equation usually is, yeah, but if you're behind or if you're – no. For me, I want to see this team get on base. When they do, I want to see them taken off. I want to see movement. I want to see energy. And I don't see that right now. And by the way, if that means for me – and I won't answer the second question, who would come off this roster, because I don't have the answer. But I will tell you, the guy that I would bring up tomorrow if I were in charge is Ji-Won Bae.
Yep, I knew you were
I would put
say
him
that.
Out in center field, and I'd play him every day for a couple weeks and put him at the top of that lineup and see what happens. That's just the fan in me. Now they're better off because they know all the metrics, and I understand that they you know, they're trying to win more than we are, the organization, Andy Haynes and company. And you know, I don't know how much longer they'll watch the same personnel. I'd also wouldn't mind. I understand the shakeup of the lineup, but I don't get it why Andrew McCutchen led off back-to-back games and had instant offense, two home runs, and then he sits the next day. And now he's not hitting leadoff anymore. And we're the other thing, they took Cruz out of the top of the order because they wanted to take the pressure off of him, and they dropped him down, I think, to the seventh spot, where he hits over 300 this year. But that lasted just a few days, and then they put him in the three-hole last night. And maybe that was because Brian Reynolds isn't seeing enough strikes. And they figure, well, if Cruz hits third, at least he's still a presence. And still pitchers don't want to deal with him. I don't care what his batting average is, his home runs or RBIs, he's a presence. And so maybe Reynolds sees more pitches to hit. Because I think he's seen the third fewest in baseball pitches in the strike zone, Brian Reynolds. So it's a lot of different factors. And again, I just don't necessarily blame one guy like Andy Haynes. It's just, it's multifaceted. But finally, I'll say this. You've got a guy on the mound tonight, a veteran that they many have seen time and time again, Alex Wood. He's a left-hander. And tonight, in fact, I just saw Andy Haynes headed to the ballpark. I said, tonight's the night, Andy. Tonight's the night that they should and could, or I guess reverse that, they could and maybe should bust out and everybody feel good about it and go on a great run starting tonight.
Well, Greg, enjoy the game. We'll definitely be staying up late and watching. I saw most of the game last night. You and I both called games in Buffalo at AAA. I think we would get three times the number of fans that I saw at that game last night.
It was no doubt.
Embarrassing.
No doubt, Andrew. I mean, heck, Buffalo, you know, they used to draw really well when they first opened up that ballpark when they're Pirates AAA affiliate. But, yeah, it's a sad state of affairs here with that many call it the mausoleum. It's sad. People are bummed out. It's a weird dynamic.
Still a strong hint of marijuana odor when you walk in. I had that experience when I went to the Raiders game there a couple of years ago.
I get that when I walk out of this hotel in San Francisco.
Gotcha.
Just walk down the street. It's just one of the odors you get in this city.
All right. We'll see you, Greg. Bye now.
See you guys.
At 4:16, time to stop blindly paying those increasing auto and home insurance premiums. Contact Buell in Gibsonia today. Fan 5 Alarm Marathon to benefit local volunteer fire departments. An all-day broadcast, actually more than that, 26 hours, going to happen in June. We're raising money for VFDs, volunteer fire departments all around the area. 93.7thefan.com to get involved in that, and you should. Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union. 800 Board Up and Hampton Beer Outlet are sponsors on what will be a really fun day. Okay, we got a lot of business to take care of here with the man that has been our draft guru for the last couple of months here and now for years on The Fan, and that is CBSSports.com's Ryan Wilson. He went to Carnegie Mellon, so you know he's very smart. He has had some outstanding analysis on the Steelers' picks. He said that Russell Wilson was the big winner from this draft because of everything that the Steelers did to help him, and also made a comment about Kenny Pickett that went viral. Ryan, has that been brought to your attention yet, that your Pickett part of this commentary has caused a lot of debate and discussion here in Pittsburgh?
It was sort of a throwaway line, too, Pony, which is funny. I said it on the podcast.
Mueller was fired up about it, Ryan.
What was Chris's issue with it?
Well, I kind of wanted to know, well, one, broadly.
He disagreed with it entirely is his first issue with
now,
it.
Now, what's going to happen with Pony here is he's going to stoke the fires.
Yes, I am.
And make me look like a real bad guy, which maybe I am. Who knows? I just am tired broadly of some of the excuse-making for Kenny Pickett. Not to say that what you said would be filed under that exclusively, because I would imagine there was some nuance to it. But I think Kenny Pickett showed us who Kenny Pickett was, regardless of who or what was around him. The question I actually had for you, based off of what you said, that throwaway line is, do you think that this predates even Omar Khan's tenure as far as them not helping Pickett the way they should have in the draft?
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, Chris, I didn't love the pick when they took him at 20, Kenny, back in the day. I thought he was more of a second-round pick, if we're being honest, and I thought he wasn't a good fit. I talked to some teams that didn't think he did a good job of reading defenses at Pitt. That said, they took him, and when I responded to one of the tweets that someone sent me, I said it was hard not to be excited about what Kenny Pickett did the 2023 preseason, because he looked like the next coming to John Elway, and then the wheels fell off. I think part of that was Matt Canada and the team's stubbornness not to move up from Matt Canada. And I think to your point, Chris, Kenny sort of showed us who he was when Russ Wilson joined the team, and he was no longer Kenny a member, because it felt like he didn't want to compete based on the reports. So, it was a throwaway line. And Deontay Johnson maybe had the same conversation. I don't know. I just thought it was sort of funny. This team is much better today than they were 12 months ago, and there's not even any room for debate, I don't think.
So the last time we talked was after the Fautanu pick got made, so I won't go through your report on him. We will do the other six guys, and I'll just name the player, and you can give me a grade like they always ask you draft guys to do for the pick, and then tell me, Ryan, a little bit more about the guy. Let's start with seemingly the player that everyone here is fired up for, and that is Zach Frazier out of West Virginia.
Yeah, A+. I mean, there's going to be a lot of these. I had him going as a little bit higher in the second, so he went pick 19, and I had him going slightly higher. I didn't think he'd be there when we spoke on Friday morning, and he was there. Jackson Powers Johnson got pushed down. He moves well in space. Maybe needs to get a little stronger at the point, but that's okay. This guy's going to be a day one starter unless something crazy happens, and he fills a huge need for Arthur Smith or Russ Wilson for Najee Harris in JL1.
I'll go with Roman Wilson then, pick 84.
Let's do another A+. Can't beat the last name. Also, he went a round higher than I thought. I thought he could be a late second round guy. He went closer to middle of the third, and there's no one tougher. He doesn't remind me of Hines Ward as a receiver. He does have some of that dog in him as a blocker, and that's what you want in what's going to be a pretty run-centric offense. He's so tough out of the slot. He catches everything thrown his way, and he's a burner. So he feels like a nice complement to what George Pickens provides.
Peyton Wilson, the man without an ACL out of NC State.
Yeah, I just mentioned Hines Ward, who also played at an ACL and played as aggressive as you can play that position and played a long time for the Steelers. The injury history is a huge concern. I'll give it an A. I can't have any concern, any issue with where they took him at the bottom of the third round. Had he been healthy and maybe a year or two younger, he's a first-round talent. I love the idea of pairing him next to Patrick Queen.
All right, now we get into the ones. You've given two A-pluses and an A. Presumably, Fautanu, I think, was an A for you as well.
Be interesting, because Donnie said he didn't love their day three picks.
Right.
That was his
take. Mason McCormick, South Dakota State, a guy who has the Kickstart My Heart hype video where he's shaking his head around looking like he's going to headbutt somebody through a cinder block wall.
I haven't seen that, but I could envision it. He had a fantastic Senior Bowl. I'll give this an A as well. South Dakota State guy, I thought he had a chance to go in round three. He has some center versatility, and I think James Daniels is going into the last year of his deal, so he provides some depth there. And if you want to see a fun matchup of non-Power 5 schools, he went up against Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa, who's a bulldozer as a defensive tackle, and they had some good matchups, and that's what turned me on to Mason early on. So I like this pick.
Yeah, you had him 84th. On your big board, he went at 119, and I think third best guard, Ryan. So to get him there sounds like very good value. All right, how about Logan Lee, defensive lineman from Iowa, their six-round pick, their first of two six-round picks?
Yeah, he went about a round higher than I thought. He went around lower than I thought. I thought he might have a chance to go bottom of fourth, early fifth. He's a tweener, and maybe Donnie has an issue with the size because he's only about 280. He's not particularly twitchy, but he uses his hands really well. He's pretty stout at the point. He flashes this swim move that he consistently wins with, and I think he adds depth. And I don't mind the pick. They needed to shore up the defensive line, and maybe he's not the sexiest pick to do that, but I give this a B+.
All right, last one. The guy with freaky traits and athleticism, or size and athleticism, for the position of cornerback, even though nobody thinks he's actually going to play there in the pros, Ryan Watts from Texas.
Yeah, he is long. He tested through the roof. I thought he might go around higher. The issue is that he's a little stiff, and that might necessitate the move to safety. And he played primarily outside of Texas. He does a lot of things well, maybe not A+ well, but I give this a B where he was drafted. He got beat on that post against Washington in the playoff game where Roma Dunze ran a perfect post. Yeah. Michael Penix made a perfect throw. He was in coverage. And he got beat by the perfect play. So if you can run with the Dunze down the field on a post, that shows your deep speed. But I don't think he's necessarily a guy you want covering guys on shorter intermediate in-breaker. So I'll give this a B, and again, I like the depth.
Would you like to give Rick Spielman a grade, Ryan?
Well, Rick, we do dollar bets, and I beat him last second 13-12 with my dollar bets about who would go where in the draft. And the winning bet for me was that the Ravens took Devin Leary. We weren't sure if he'd get drafted. So I'll give Rick an A-minus just for being a sore loser, and I'll give myself an A+.
Wow.
Ryan, big picture, where would you stack the Steelers up among their total draft class compared to the rest of the
league? This is one of the best draft classes they've had in a while, and they did pretty good last year. This is an A-plus draft if you want a letter grade. And it is one of the best draft classes we saw outside of teams.
Damn.
Not the Falcons, but like the Bears, for example, getting their franchise quarterback. The Steelers are right behind them only because they didn't have a franchise quarterback to draft.
Well, your peers are already mocking quarterbacks to them in 2025 in the first round, like Quinn Ewers and the Penn State quarterback, Drew Aller. Ryan, do you?
Yeah, let's wait and see. I think we might have a situation where we're talking about Justin Fields and come November. We'll find that out together.
Right.
But, and then, you extend him and worry about the quarterback situation later, because this offense under Arthur Smith feels like it's perfectly suited for success from a young quarterback like Justin Fields. But,
do you look at those guys as first-round material, both of them, the Penn State kid and the Texas QB?
Not Drew Aller. Quinn Ewers will be interesting. He probably would have been a second-round pick, third-round pick this year. He returned. Physically, he needs to get a little stronger, and he needs to quit getting hurt. But he has a big arm.
What about Shedeur Sanders as the last guy there that people keep talking about?
Yeah, the issue is that, all the nonsense that goes on around him with his dad in that program.
Like him talking trash on a player who just transferred to Austin Peay and just saying, this guy sucked, I don't even remember him.
Oh, jeez, yeah. That's rough.
Let's not do that. In terms of talent on the field, I was impressed with what he did over the first month of the season. The wheels fell off for that program afterwards, after they went 3-0. He has first-round talent, but again, teams could be scared off by all the stuff we're talking about otherwise.
Yeah. All right, Ryan Wilson, such a great job. CBSSports.com. Check out his podcast with Rick Spielman, the former Vikings GM, and watch him on CBS Sports HQ. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, guys.
Called the debrief. And it is brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread.
The debrief, April 30, 2024. The NFL draft viewership is out. NFL media put this out earlier today. Total unduplicated audience of 53.6 million for the three-day event. Average of 5.9 million viewers, both TV and digital, over the three-day stretch. Highest round one average in terms of viewers and total unduplicated audience since 2021. And also this little note, 775,000 fans attended the draft in Detroit. A new record.
Jeez, dude. 775,000.
I don't know how they measure that. They don't have tickets, so it's not like they're scanning them and counting them or they're going through turnstiles. But okay. Part of me thinks that every year they just make the number bigger than last year's.
That would be like WWF with WrestleMania Dome? 3. Yeah, I knew it, Donnie. 95,000 or whatever.
Yeah. According to Channel 4, one of the NFL executives said, we, as in Pittsburgh, are very much in the running for the 2026 draft. Next year's in Green Bay. 2026 hasn't been announced yet. I still don't know where we'd put it. I don't understand how they're going to make it work in Green Bay. Where are these people going to stay? Well, I guess they have hotels there for football games. What am I talking about?
I mean, Green Bay is at least, I think, maybe I'm an idiot here. Isn't it pretty flat where that all is? Like, it's kind of just a flat piece of Midwest.
There were just homes all around it.
I know,
like, it's in a neighborhood.
I mean, couldn't you just put it, though, like, in some sort of big, I don't know, public park?
Do they have massive public parks in Green Bay?
Now I'm looking at it here.
Do we have a massive public park here that you think we could put a draft in?
Yeah,
Shenley Park?
Put the draft in North Park.
Man, imagine
go some to the boathouse.
Imagine some of the dough people could make that weekend if they just had like an Airbnb they could rent out there.
100%, man. I'd be the hell out of town.
I mean, if they just had Woodstock and Saugerties, New York, and some big ass fields, why can't they do something similar with
Saugerties? That's another
some
one
farmland
of those,
here.
That's another one of those towns I'll never understand how to pronounce. I'm looking at Green Bay, and I think I've done Green Bay a disservice here. I don't know if there's anywhere to put any of this stuff.
It's a lot of people watching the draft.
Dude, I mean, it is more appointment viewing, I would say, than what? Almost anything other than like NFL and college football?
I mean, think about what it goes up against. It goes head-to-head with the Stanley Cup playoffs. It goes head-to-head with the NBA playoffs. And those sports in playoff rounds lose out to a selection meeting.
Well, and in this case, it's a selection meeting where literally everybody knew who the first pick was going to be for months, frankly, before the pick was made.
Yeah, I don't know if Alex and Sarah probably not as much because Sarah's big time into football and has the latitude and longitude coordinates of Heinz Field tattooed on her body.
Alex actually has, I think...
Something Penguins related?
No. I think she's got latitude and longitude tattooed, too.
Of your house?
No.
Of what?
Pittsburgh, like rib cage.
Okay, but Sarah has the specific ones for the stadium.
Oh, yeah. Alex doesn't have that.
Amanda doesn't understand the appeal of the draft. Her idea was they all get together and they draft and they get it done. And then they just come out afterwards and they show us the results.
Like a closed
door draft. It's like Little League Baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
man. Or when schools like pick which students are in each class, which I also think is a draft. Right? Would your mom draft her students?
Is that a real thing?
No.
I think in elementary school it is.
No. I mean, I know like parents can request teachers, I think, sometimes. I know that happens. But I know by and large, back when we had like split fourth grades, because eventually
there was a draft.
Well, by the time I got to eighth grade, it was just my mom's eighth grade class. Like,
imagine the results coming out, and you're that last kid that got selection.
Mr. Irrelevant.
You see, like, you see notes they were taking. Just a complete clown. Don't want him in our class.
Donnie, but overall, the draft is just you're hearing names and highlights.
It's background music, by the way, for me. I don't watch it religiously. Like, I'll have the TV on, but we were having a shuffleboard tournament down the street at my neighbor's house on night two. Friday.
Yeah, see, Friday I'm still way too into it.
I'm into it in the sense that I'm like looking at who's off the board and starting to formulate who are they going to potentially identify. Like that part of it I'm into. But otherwise, it's passive viewing for me.
Oh, I've got names I'm crossing off lists. I'm trying to forecast which team is going to take who.
On Friday night.
Because I just love it. You mean this is where your team, this is team building. This is where your roster gets put together.
Man, I'm not making a list and checking it twice, though. I'm watching TV, drinking beer, and playing shuffleboard.
Well, I did a little bit of that on Saturday. But, I mean, there's a lot of going up against. Look at some of the TV shows that are out there right now. Like, TLC has a new show called MILF Manor. You're telling me Sarah's not more intrigued by MILF Manor than she is who the Steelers are going to take in the fourth round? What's it about? MILFs?
What are those?
What are they? Mothers, I'd like to... But anyways, one of the characters on the show, dad and son have dated the same woman.
How?
MILF Manor.
So wait a minute.
Yeah. Go ahead. You can ask away. I haven't watched it yet, but I've skimmed.
Who dated her first? Dad or son?
Dad.
Then traded him in for the newer model?
She did.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I guess so.
I think that's actually weirder for the son. What
MILF
are you
Manor
doing?
MILF Manor TLC. Check it out. Also, this show...
yes, the Learning Channel. Educational programming.
Also, the show Baby Reindeer on Netflix that's taken the world by storm.
What's
Have you
about?
Watched that yet?
It's a baby reindeer,
clearly. No, it's not.
It's like some dark show about like a comedian. Is that the right one?
Yes, and Stalker. It's been number one on Netflix for like 2 weeks. It is creepy. It freaks you right out, man. It really does.
What was that show Alex used to watch? It was called...
22 million views in the last week. Baby Reindeer, folks.
Sarah's Files?
No, Sarah's definitely watched it. It was called You.
Oh, yes, Sarah has seen it.
Penn Badgley or whatever.
I watched the first couple of seasons. I didn't keep up with it.
I got tired of that. Man, those shows just don't have staying power.
Well, this
like
is
seeing
a
something come on
this
FX or whatever.
Done. Baby Reindeer's a one and done
I'll stick with Always Sunny and stuff like that. Baby Reindeer. Why are they naming it Baby Reindeer if it's about a creepy stalker situation?
Because that
situation?
Was the stalker's nickname for the guy she was stalking.
Baby Reindeer. So is this like a Play Misty for Me situation?
What's that mean?
That's about a radio disc jockey, a male disc jockey, who gets basically stalked by a female listener who would always call in and say, Play Misty for me.
Yeah, it's similar. I haven't seen that, but yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
What if you had somebody who stalked you for your takes on the air?
I did have a stalker once upon a time.
Wow.
Why'd you say wow like that?
Because I didn't know that you had a stalker.
Clint Eastwood, play Misty for me.